Welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Thank you to all those who are listening and all those who are watching. And please, like and subscribe to the new YouTube channel. I think we have about 170 videos on there now, but we don't want it to be the best kept secret. So please help us build the community as we build the experiences that are all part and parcel of The Leadership Enigma. Now, this episode is a very important episode because I have the wonderful Jane Funsale, who is the CEO of a UK-based charity, Working Families. And, as the title would describe, working passionately to help working parents and carers in relation to the workplace. And I have so many questions, but as always, come back to me after this break. You don't want to miss this particular episode. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Jane, it's a huge warm welcome to The Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Adam. Thanks so much for inviting me.
It's a bit weird, isn't it, when I say come back to me after the break, but the reality is there is no break in the studio. So thank you for being patient with me and going with the flow. Listen, it's absolutely wonderful to have you here. It really is. I did a very quick introduction, but just help me understand the role that you have at the moment as the CEO of Working Families.
So we're a charity, we're a UK-based charity, yep. And we exist to remove the barriers that working parents and carers face in the workplace. So that's our mission.
Yes.
And we do that in various ways, three ways predominantly. We have a free legal advice line, which empowers working parents and carers to understand and use their workplace rights. And the people who contact us want to keep their jobs. They're not silly. They understand the power dynamics. They don't want to sue their employers. We also work with employers to help them build, create and sustain flexible and family-friendly workplaces. And we use those two views. What we know is possible in the world of work from the amazing employers we work with.
Yes.
What we know is not working from what we hear on our helpline to push for practical, positive policy change.
And I'm going to dig into those a little bit more, but I want to go to your personal story as well, because there's always, and we had this chat very briefly, there's always the human being behind the human doing. But when we talk about policy, let me just leapfrog slightly, because you are actually invited, aren't you, to assist the government in relation to policy.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about that, about your involvement at that level.
So a number of years ago, the Department of Business and Trade, as they are now,
yes.
But they used to be the Department of Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy.
Things changed.
Yes, exactly. So they put together a flexible working task force. And this was to help them understand what was possible around flexible working and how they could influence business, particularly, to work more flexibly. And there were a large number of organisations, so the CIPD, ACAS, ourselves, other charities, the TUC. And so we've been working with them since 2018. And as a result of that, a number of things have happened. So we worked with an MP called Yasmin Qureshi to bring forward her private members bill, which has changed flexible working regulations. So from the 6th of April, anyone who is an employee will be entitled to request flexible working from day one of employment. They'll be able to make that request three times in a year, and their employer will have to have some kind of conversation with them about whether or not that's possible. So the onus will be much more on the employer to think through how could we accommodate this request.
Right.
And for us, that's hugely exciting.
And that comes in very soon, as you
6th of April, 2024.
Which
so
is not
literally
very far
around
away.
The corner.
Oh, well, this is very timely,
yes,
isn't it? Really?
Yes, it is very timely. And we're working with government. So ACAS is developing some guidelines, and we're working with government to give free access to our logo, Happy to Talk Flexible Working, which is a flag from the employer to the employee at recruitment stage to say, don't be frightened to have that conversation with us. Not every job can be done flexibly in the same way, but there is flexibility in every single job.
Let's focus on this topic because it's something that comes up all the time. And I think flexible working as a topic has been around for some time.
Yep.
Is that a fair comment? But absolutely. The pandemic shone a light on it and everyone, did they panic and think about how do we now define flexible working for all of the various individuals within our businesses? So people have been sat where you're sat, Jane, who have organizations over 150 countries, which are hundreds of thousands strong, and flexibility is an issue for all of us globally now because of the pandemic. And now I know you're focused on the UK. So can you help us with a couple of things? Let me break this down. What on earth does flexibility mean then in the eyes of the employer and the employee? And are you hearing or seeing some tension in relation to expectations?
Yes and yes.
Have I just asked the $64 million question, which is an episode in itself? I don't know, Jane, but help me.
So it's flexible working, as far as working families is concerned, is all of the ways in which you can work flexibly. So, for example, term time working is flexible working, part-time working, a job share, hybrid, occasionally working from somewhere different. So lots of people have done flexible working for generations. If you think of anybody who worked internationally, they would be leaving their office, going to a different country, doing a bit of work there and coming back. Now, that's flexible working. If you're doing a 70-hour week, that may not feel like flexible working. Yeah. But in terms of doing it from different places, it is.
Did we call it flexible working then?
No.
Or did we call it
business travel.
Right. Okay. So in some ways, there was a new category felt like it emerged after the pandemic, but it wasn't really new, was it?
No, it wasn't new at all.
Okay.
But what was new was the volume of time people were spending at home.
Yes.
And I think for many people, it didn't feel like working from home. It felt like living at work.
Right.
Which was not a good thing.
No, tell me about that, because that's many articles written about just this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So for many people, they would have a commute into the place that they worked at.
Yes.
And that would kind of bookend the day. So they might use that opportunity in their commute to work, or they might read, or they might have a snooze, all kinds of things. But what we found was that initially people were working from the time they got up. Instead of the commute, they were doing their commute from their bedroom, sometimes from their bedroom to their bedroom, sometimes from their bedroom to somewhere else in the house.
Not everyone had the luxury of space, did they, during the pandemic?
No.
Let's be clear about that.
Absolutely. So if you were stuck in a high rise with two children under five, that was not a lot of fun.
No.
If you were living in shared accommodation where you literally were doing your work from your laptop on your bed, that was not a lot of fun. And, you know, people died. It was an awful time for so many people. What it did open up, though, was the knowledge and the experience that there were some jobs that could be done from home. Some jobs can't be, those place-based jobs. You know, we talked about all of those extraordinary people that actually made the world work during COVID. So nurses, doctors, the bin men, people working in supermarkets, all of the ways in which we did that clapping for carers, but we had all of those key workers. All of those people needed to go.
Kept us going.
Absolutely kept us going. And all of them had to go to a place to deliver the work that they were doing.
Have we got short memories, Jane? Because I remember we were all
ridiculously short memories.
It stood out there banging pots. But have we actually forgotten about those very key workers who saved lives, kept the country running, and now in some ways we're back to business, and it's what is going on there with this? There was a lack of compassion in it, that it was, oh, yes, oh, actually, no. It's almost shiny over there. We move forward. That didn't happen.
Yes, let's forget about that. I think for lots of people, they do want to forget lots about it because it really wasn't pleasant.
No, it wasn't.
And, you know, it has led to lots of mental health issues, particularly amongst younger people. Mm. You know, that isolation was really not good for us. We're social human animals.
I had two teenagers in it, Jane.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Do we even know the consequences of that yet?
No.
Or are we? No,
I don't.
Not even close, are we?
We also don't know the consequences of what it's like to be stuck to a mobile phone or stuck to a laptop for all of that time. And, you know, one of the things I think that we would certainly push for is a sense of boundary between your work and your life, so that you're much more able to give of yourself everywhere, but you've got that kind of ability to power down and recharge.
Almost that, I suppose the commute in some ways, many people who travel the tube will not think this, but it was a decompression time.
It could be. For some people, it absolutely would have been a decompression time. And also, first thing in the morning, getting ready to be at work. So we have these conversations about bringing your whole self to work. And of course, that's important.
Yes.
But at the same time, we all need those boundaries. And at the same time, bringing your whole self to work also sometimes means putting on that kind of professional part of you.
Yes.
You know, most of us, when we go to work, will wear a specific set of clothes. If you're a bin man, it's going to be stuff that you can chuck in the washing machine at the end of the day.
Yeah.
For someone like me, who is going to be presenting herself in a particular way, I'm not going to be wearing my yoga clothes.
You may have been during the pandemic.
I certainly may have been during the pandemic. But, you know, so there are those boundaries, those things that we do slightly differently. It's not that we are pretending to be somebody else.
No, we're still authentic.
Absolutely.
But we are having to fulfill a role and an expectation. That's fair, isn't it? Absolutely.
And particularly,
which is exhausting.
It can be exhausting. And it certainly is in an employment relationship. Your employer is expecting something from you, and you are expected to give something back.
Yes.
And in the same way, you are expecting something from your employer, and your employer is expected to give something back. So it's a relationship that can be mutually beneficial.
Yes.
But it's also a relationship where you can be taken for granted.
Did we also see in the pandemic that the pendulum swung, or the power swung, to the employee a little bit more than the employer? And then actually maybe that has shifted slightly again post-pandemic. And I'm not going to say we're getting back to normal, because we're never going back to how it was. Mm. But we're in a post-pandemic chapter now. Did you see or sense in the work that you were doing that the power had shifted or was shifting during that time?
I think it depends very much on where you are in the labour market.
Right, okay.
So in a world where there aren't a lot of jobs available,
yes,
then yes, the employer has more power.
Yeah.
In a world of work where there are many people in employment and employers are looking for those elusive few who aren't in work and have the skills they need for that particular role,
yes,
then yes, the power shifts slightly towards the employee. But I think always the challenge is that it depends on where you are in the world of work.
Yes.
So if you have a rare set of skills and those skills are in demand, then you have lots more to negotiate with.
Mm.
If you're working in a job that doesn't actually need particularly specific skills, then you really don't have a lot of power. So, for example, we would hear during the pandemic, we would hear for people who had been in a call centre, and call right. centres traditionally can't be done from home, suddenly had to be done from home. But what we were finding was that we would have calls from people saying, I'm at home with two small children, I'm on a call centre, and there is no flexibility in terms of how I do my job.
Right.
And that became incredibly difficult, and that person didn't have any power within their relationship with their employer.
And you must have heard story after story after story that was really quite eye-opening as regards how deeply personal the pandemic was for people.
Oh, absolutely.
I talk to leaders all the time, and some say, I loved it. And I'm sure you did, from wherever it was, your country home and the garden, etc. And you know, that's okay. And some people said, I'm ambivalent to it. And other people said, I deeply dislike the pandemic. Mm. And I'm in that part. I deeply dislike the pandemic. I saw two teenagers struggle. I lost a parent. So for me, it was something that... But actually, I'm very grateful for it, because the podcast started it. So there is a yin and a yang. But yep. Actually, I think my default is I could have done without that
yep.
experience
Absolutely.
At that time. Has it changed your view at all with really getting a little bit of a window into all of these people's lives and experiences? Have you changed tack slightly?
Oh, as an organisation, absolutely. understood, we had always understood, because we were always talking to working parents and carers who were struggling yep. within the world of work and managing those family responsibilities. But, you know, I know the team got really quite cross when people would say, oh, we're all in the same boat. And they would go, no.
We're in the same storm.
We're in the same storm, exactly. But yeah. your boat looks a lot yeah. different.
Your yacht.
Yes, exactly. Yes, with ballast and all of the things that you need in it. And again, we would come back to this idea that if you are on a lower income,
yes.
your experience is so different to those people who are on higher incomes. We do some research. We did a Working Families Index Spotlight report on families who are on lower incomes as defined by the Joseph Rowndery Foundation.
Okay.
And a lot of those people are not getting the flexible work they want. They can't get enough hours to sustain their families.
Right.
Because the flexible working options are simply not there for them. They're being turned down. It's not necessarily because their employers are bad people or nasty people. Sometimes it's about it being a small employer and they are literally trying to keep everything going and trying to keep everybody employed.
Right.
And so it's about helping them understand what's possible and what's not possible. And so for us on our helpline, that is what's most exciting, is the feedback we get from people when we ask them 3 to 6 months after they called us, did you understand more about your rights when you finished the call? And 99.9% of people say, yes, I did. And if they say no, it's because actually the employment rights don't actually relate to them as individuals. So they might be a freelance worker or they might be self-employed and then they have different rights. Mm. But also we then ask them, were you able to implement the advice that we gave you? And they come back to us and they say, absolutely. My favourite response always is, I got to keep my job.
Which is what people want. Let's
Which
be
is
honest.
What people That's want.
Vast
yep.
majority want yep. to be in employment.
Yep.
want to add value. Want to sustain themselves.
Absolutely.
Want to provide. It's almost there's elements of human need there.
Yes.
Isn't
absolutely.
There? I definitely want to talk to you about systems, employers, and policy. But let me just summarize a little bit about flexibility. Flexibility is not really new, is it? It's yep. always been around, but we've defined it maybe in a post-pandemic environment. You also said that flexibility are various components, and you gave some examples of that. Are you seeing some mistakes being made in relation to how an employer or an employee may approach the issue of flexibility?
Certainly. As far as the employer is concerned, yep. we are hearing more and more people saying about what we loosely call the knowledge economy or knowledge workers.
Right.
And by this, I mean really somebody who can sit at their desk and do their job. But it doesn't really matter where their desk is. It could be at home, it could be at work, it could be in an office, as opposed to what we call a place-based jobs.
Right.
So, for example, a cleaner or a brain surgeon.
Right.
You know, you've got to go somewhere to deliver what you're doing.
Yes.
And certainly what we are hearing a lot from larger employers who have a lot of office-based people is there's this demand that you must come back to the office and we will tell you when you need to come back and how many days you need to come back for. So there are, of course, really important things that we can only accomplish when we're together.
Right.
One of our employer members is an organisation, the FSCS, and they initially started post-pandemic saying to people, you need to be in the office between 30 and 50% of the time.
Right.
And then they found that individuals were in the office, but they were doing one-to-ones with their staff team on Zoom or Teams. And they went, that's not actually what we want you to be in the office for. So now what they're saying is not that there's a specific amount of time, but there are things or things that you must do together. So you must come into the office once a month for a team meeting,
right.
for example. All of your one-to-ones must be done face-to-face. Now, obviously, there will always be exceptions. If the one-to-one, you know, if somebody's got a really nasty virus,
of course,
you don't want them in the office. but on the other hand, there are those collaborations, those very deliberate collaborations that need to be done in person with people in the same room.
This is all about human connection.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? And I had Adrian Simpson sat exactly where you are, who had a lovely phrase. He said, really, if you're trying to bring people back into a workspace, it really should be either for connection, celebration, or education.
Absolutely.
Together. And I love that. I love that phrase. So shout out to Adrian. Are there some organizations who you see as really getting this right? They found the balance, or they found the flexibility in themselves to allow people to work flexibly?
Firstly, I'd tell everybody, look at our website, www.workingfamilies.org.uk.
We're in the show notes.
And we'll have a look at the 160 employer members that currently work with us.
Right. 160?
160 employer members.
Right.
And there are many who used to work with us and were members for kind of 10 years.
Right.
And have gotten it so right that they actually don't need our support anymore.
Okay.
And I would point to, for example,
yes,
Zurich Insurance.
Okay.
Now, predominantly, they're a desk-based, knowledge-based industry or organisation. They now advertise every single one of their jobs is advertised as flexible, part-time or job share.
Every single one?
Every single one of their jobs.
To the highest levels
To the highest levels.
Wow.
Every single one. And they felt it was so important that they worked with the Government Equality Office and the Behavioural Insights team and have given the Behavioural Insights team access to their HR data, anonymised data, of course. But that is pretty much unheard of for a big corporate.
Yeah, I was going to
say. And they've got a report coming out soon. But they have had increases in engagement, increases in productivity, increases in the number of senior women being appointed, increases in the total number of both men and women applying for jobs. And anecdotally, one of the things I find the most interesting is that not everybody who applies for the job wants to work flexibly on day one. What they want is to know that should their circumstances change, that that is available to them.
And let's be honest, they will for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you're passionate about this, and we talk about changing life circumstances. I want to understand a little bit about what is fueling your passion for this. Because you were allowed to work flexibly, weren't you?
I absolutely was.
Many moons. Tell us a little bit about this story, because maybe this is it's the trial lawyer in me, Jane. I'm looking, it's the evidence in relation to what is fueling the work that you do and the passion that you have. So tell us a little bit about that.
So in very, very early on in my career, I worked in South Africa. And I worked for an insurance company. And I lived about an hour and a half's drive from the office where I was working.
Right.
Brilliant. Went out into the countryside after work, drove in the morning. And then my father got very ill. And he and I had had a very dodgy relationship for many years post my parents' divorce. And one of my father's friends called me and said, Jane, your father's in hospital. Right. I really think you should go and see him. And with great reluctance, I went to see my father. Mm-hmm. And it was, I could tell from my father's expression that it was incredibly important to him that I was there.
How old were you at this point?
I was in my mid-20s.
Okay.
And my early to mid-20s. And the hospital that my father was in was about 10 minutes away from my office.
Right.
And, you know, in the 80s, going in to visit people in hospital, there were many more rules around when you could and when you couldn't.
Okay.
And my then boss allowed me to work flexibly. And so for a number of months, I was visiting my father every day, somewhere between 12 and 3 in the afternoon, for a significant period of time.
Right.
That was my first experience of flexible working. And as a result, it transformed my relationship with my father.
Wow.
And that was just such a gift. My father died 18 months later. But by the time he died, we had developed a really close, loving relationship. And, you know, he put some effort into that. Let's be clear.
Sure.
You know, it was my dad putting the effort in. But it wouldn't have been as easy if I hadn't had that opportunity gifted to me by my then boss, who was a dad himself.
Right.
And wanted to support me to have that kind of relationship.
That there's a very human element to that, isn't there? It's almost the human experience of your boss has provided you an opportunity, which sounds like that's had a transforming
nature. Oh, absolutely. Transformative effect on my life.
For you. Do you think that is very much fueling what you do now?
Oh, absolutely.
The work, the personal purpose that
yes.
that you have.
Yes. I love working. I really do. I get so much from my job. I meet people that I would never have met in my kind of my small world. You know, we all have our little worlds.
We do. our little bubbles.
Our little bubbles. I meet people that I would have never met through my little bubble. I get a lot of joy, some real interest, and also a view onto a world which isn't reflective of my privileged position. And I think that's incredibly important for all of us as human beings, is that we acknowledge that I'm lucky enough to be healthy.
Yes.
That is not the case for, you know, the working parents and carers that call us are frequently caring for somebody who has appalling health, really bad health. So there are all of those kinds of things that just make you realise quite how, in some ways, how lucky you are.
It reminds me, because I lost my mother at the start of the pandemic, and in the years prior to that, actually, my father, who is still around, he's 93, see him tonight, was very much the carer for my mother. And I know how stressful that was for us to see the difficulties for both of them in that. And it's only when you get that unique and up close and quite personal insight that you start to realize that actually some things that we take for granted, we are blessed for in many ways. And your organization is wholly remote, isn't it?
We are.
So tell me a little bit about that. How do, why and what does that feel like, and how does that fit into really the purpose that the organization has?
We used to have an office.
Yep.
When I first started working for the charity, we had an office.
How long ago was
that? Well, I started working for the charity in 2018, so quite a while ago.
Pre-pandemic.
So we had an office,
yep.
And I like being with people. I find that energising. So I would go into the office every day. Almost everybody working for the charity at that point was working flexibly, but what that meant was either part-time or a couple of days at home. There was one team that was pretty much remote, but there was also one team that had to be in the office.
Yeah.
And then, of course, COVID hit, and we were spending £60,000 a year for the benefit of having 10 desks. Now, we also got the cleaning, the free coffee, the buildings insurance. So actually for us, it was a pretty good value for money.
But it's still a lot of money for anyone.
But for a charity, £60,000.
Yeah.
And so we gave up that office. And then post-pandemic, what we realised was that actually we'd been able to recruit geographically across the UK.
Right.
Which meant that some of those difficult to recruit for positions had been filled sooner than we had expected, which was wonderful.
An immediate benefit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually it worked. It genuinely worked. And so we didn't need to come back to the office.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, we haven't. What we also do is there, we allow people to use shared working space if they need to. So one of my colleagues was working a four-day week. Her husband was working a four-day week. And on the day that her husband was home with their small person,
yes,
she would go to a co-working space.
Right. Of which there are many now, aren't
there? Of which there are many.
All over.
Absolutely. One of my colleagues was living in a flat with a flat share. And so, again, would go and use a co-working space.
Yeah.
And the other joy for us is that once a month, we meet in person as a team, and that's 90% of the staff team will meet, because people work part-time.
Yeah.
If it's not your working day, you're not expected to come.
Right.
If you have a crisis in care, so one of the team, we met yesterday, but one of the team was online in a hybrid situation because her small person had tonsillitis. So in bed, asleep.
I know what that feels like.
Yeah. But for us, it's absolutely brilliant. It really, really works.
But Jane, what does work mean to you then?
It's not a place to go to.
Right.
It's a thing that I do. And like so many people who work in the charity sector, I'm fueled by passion. So in many ways, it doesn't actually feel like work. It just feels like a really fun activity.
Do you find that this subject, this is why I was so keen to have this conversation with you, that when we're talking about this, we're really talking about care, humanity, compassion, empathy. understand. I could keep going, couldn't
yes,
I, with it?
But absolutely.
That's what we're talking about, isn't yeah. it? Not productivity, hours, place to work, title. We're talking about something much more human, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So we one of the things that we advocate for is for employers to do good quality job design. So when you have a role that needs to be filled,
yep.
where does it need to be done? How many hours does it need to get it done? In what manner do you want it done? And who do you want it done with?
Right.
So is this a team-based activity? Is it a solo activity? And all of those when you answer all of those questions, you will then know what flexibility there can be in that job. And one of the things that we say to employers is make sure the job is human-sized.
Tell me what you mean by that.
So if it's a 40-hour job...
I'm writing that down already. Human-sized. Go
if
on.
If it's a 40-hour job,
yep.
can it be done in 40 hours? If you're advertising it as a part-time job,
yes.
it's only 2 or 3 days. Is it actually that the person is working 5 days a week but just trying to cram and getting paid for 3 days
right.
a week but trying to cram everything in? So it's about that human-sized job and also looking at the outcomes. What is it that you want delivered? And focus on the delivery. Don't focus on whether or not they're in the office from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
You know, there's this idea that line managers think that people will be more productive in the office because the line manager can see them.
Oh, this is an issue of trust, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's an issue of trust. I can remember when I was first working, if there was nothing more to do at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, in the days pre-computer, you would get out...
Which I remember, Jane. So
yes, absolutely. You'd get out a manual and maybe have a magazine inside the manual and look like you were studying. Or if there was absolutely nothing left to do, and I use this in my work because I went through a period of training people on how to use desktop publishing. And the first thing that I would do was to teach them how to play cards on a computer
right.
because it gave them mouse control.
I love it.
Because before that, nobody could use their right hand or their left hand while looking at a screen
right.
and trying to get that funny little thing to move around.
You were the instigator of
I was the
human mouse control.
Do
you remember
but
those
also,
days where it really was, presence was working, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you could be literally doing nothing. But
yep.
as long as you could be seen, and let's be honest, it wasn't that long ago where people were punching time cards
yep.
in and out.
Yeah.
And I don't know any places that still do that, but that was very yep. common, wasn't it? Especially
yep.
in maybe the blue-collar sector and all
yep.
the factories. It was
yeah.
exactly.
And
my
jobs,
father remembers that.
Yeah, and those jobs still exist. You know, many people are paid because of the amount of time that they are giving to the role.
And they're paid by time,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, exactly. So there are all kinds of jobs. So there are Sir Robert McAlpine, you know, construction firm, they were really concerned by the number of suicides that were happening across the construction industry.
Right.
So there are more men die by suicide than women die by suicide. And one of the things that they wanted to do was to encourage their employees or give them the opportunity to spend more time with their families. Because if you have a good quality relationship, that can be a factor that is really supportive
right.
of you. And they worked together with one of our ambassadors, a woman called Anna Whitehouse, known on the radio as Mother Pucker. And they worked with her to get flexibility built into all of the roles within their organization.
Right.
Sickness rates dropped, productivity went up, and people were happier.
And that's a massive piece of the puzzle, happiness, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. If you enjoy your job and if your life is okay, you can bring your whole self to work, do a good quality job and go away again. Work impacts life, life impacts work. You can't separate them out.
You know, I remember in my early days as well, where there was always that phrase of leave your baggage at the door, leave your personal life at the door. It's almost leave your being.
Leave your human being.
Leave the human being there and come in and do stuff for 8 or 9 hours, which is monstrous, let's be honest. But I think, the reason that I want us to have this conversation, we're actually talking about a topic that has not only impact on the top and bottom line, but this has impact on well-being and also decreasing suicide rates.
Mm. Mm.
It's as important as that, isn't it, Jane?
Oh, absolutely. And you think of parents who are bringing up children. You need money to do that.
Oh, boy.
You know?
Yep.
You need to pay the rent, buy the food, heat the house, get the school uniforms, all of the kind of absolutely standard things.
And it's never ending.
If you're on a lower income, your ability to pay for formal childcare is non-existent.
Yep.
One of our callers told us that the childcare where she was £11.20 an hour, and she was earning £9.80 an hour.
Right.
Now, you can't pay for childcare at a price that is more than you're actually bringing home, and then pay all of your other bills as well.
People are having to make very tough choices.
Very,
aren't
very
they?
Tough choices. And 99.9% of parents want to be really good quality parents. They want their children to have a better life experience than they had.
Yeah.
They want their children to have as good a life experience as all of the other children they see around them. They're all, you know, all parents are aspirational for their children. They want them to be happy and well and healthy.
In a world that has gone slightly crazy.
Let's
be honest.
Yes.
Every organisation, Jane, is going to be hiring working parents and carers. And that population has an enormous amount to offer, but perhaps challenges which may be either hidden or just simply not really understood. Can I just kind of go through those three areas? You talked about systems, employers, and policy, to maybe your top tips for anyone listening and watching this who is a working parent or carer and an employer of a human being.
Yes.
What are the things that are front of mind for you that people should be mindful of? Let's take systems first, and let's take the employer, the business.
Yep.
What kind of things should they be mindful of, or what should be top of mind?
So we would say job design.
Right.
Understand what the job is, where it needs to be done, when, where, and how. The culture of the organisation is really important. So if you have the kind of culture where you trust your employees, you'll get
the best out of them. We're back to that word, aren't we?
Back to trust.
Yep.
The other important thing is leading from the top, walking the walk, talking the talk.
Role modelling.
Absolutely.
Right.
Real modelling.
I like that better. Yeah. Real modelling.
Real modelling.
I'm having that, Jane.
Yes.
Okay.
And then support your line managers. The Chartered Management Institute says that somewhere between 84 and 89% of line managers have never had any people training.
Right.
Never had any people management training.
It's not really setting people up for success, is it?
No, it isn't. And so, with the best policies in the world, if you have inconsistent application of those policies, you'll get pockets of unhappiness within the organisation.
Understood. Okay.
So we think all of those things are incredibly important. So policies are important.
Yes.
Culture, line management, and then leadership.
And one of the things that, I mean, my whole focus is on leadership, but actually I'm going to go to something else. What I'm hearing you saying is about when you're defining a role, it's being very deliberate about it, not just the job description in relation to this is what the human must do. It's a little bit more involved than that now.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That's the thing that really stands out for me. And in relation to the employee, so people, I hope, listening and watching this, and let's be honest, it's a huge number of people who are working parents and carers. And I watched my wife struggle as a younger lawyer at that time. So, yes, maybe a privileged opportunity, but again, with two small children, monstrously difficult. And we didn't have the answer. And in the end, she ended up leaving law.
Yeah.
But that was a personal choice, but it was incredibly difficult to balance. So what kinds of things maybe should people be thinking about who have got real value to add, want to be employed, but are also dealing with the very real challenge of being a parent or even a single parent and or a carer in some way?
Yep. So we did some research back in the early 2000s where we looked at what are called micro-organisations.
Okay.
So those organisations employing less than 10 people. And what we found was that informal flexibility was never a problem in those organisations because the boss, the business owner, the employer, understood the family needs of their employees, and the employees understood the business needs of the business.
Right.
And they were able to have human-to-human conversations with one another. And so for us, whenever we talk to people on the telephone, that is the thing that we say is have those human-to-human conversations with people.
Okay.
And if you understand the needs of the business, you know, you don't need to understand, what the profit and loss statements. You don't need to understand the productivity levels. What you do need to know is within the work that you're doing, when's the busiest time? What's the most important thing that you're being asked to deliver?
Yes.
And then having that conversation about how your flexibility will be able to work, but still deliver.
So this again comes back to the point. What I'm hearing here is it's just a more deliberate and better understanding of the requirements of the role from the individual's perspective and from the organization's perspective.
Yep.
Is that a fair
summary?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, of course, that only works when you've got a reasonable employer and a reasonable employee.
Yep.
And there will always be breakdowns in relationship and breakdowns in communication.
Okay.
But mostly what we find is most employers are actually decent people and want to do the right thing.
Well, most people, I don't meet many people who wake up and want to be evil, toxic and mischievous.
If
there are any out there, by all means, come on the show and let's have a discussion. But I don't meet people like that,
no,
Jane.
Absolutely.
So, but we all fundamentally are flawed and human. We'll get things wrong. This is what we're talking about,
absolutely,
aren't we?
Absolutely. And then, of course, one of the things that government has done has put in place some employment laws, some rules and regulations, which will support you as an employee if your employer is doing something which is discriminatory or illegal.
So there is support there.
There is support there. It can be very challenging if you're on a lower income because you don't have access to employment lawyers who can fight your case. But there are things that you can do. And certainly one of the things that we offer is our free legal advice line.
Is this like the Citizens Advice or
exactly a
similar system?
A similar system, yeah.
Right, okay.
So we deal exclusively with employment law. But we've got 200 plus advice pages on our website,
right,
which are free to use. And we have more than a million unique visitors to those advice pages every year, which means that people need that information.
Right.
But also means that it's written really well and is accessible to people.
You're being a force for good, aren't you, Jane?
Well, I hope I'm being a small force for good, but I must say the charity and the extraordinary team that I work with, they are the ones that are being a force for good. They're the ones who are going out and supporting the employers to get these good, flexible, family-friendly workplaces. They're the ones on the phone and writing the advice pages and talking to people who are not having that good quality experience.
Here we are in 2024 and there's always something going on and there's always challenge. And we're saying now that perhaps at the moment is one of the most difficult times for anyone to lead. And as a CEO, Jane, you simply can't have all of the answers to some of the very big fundamental questions that you have to have answers to. Is that? Can I say that? I'm going to say that to every CEO that comes and sits in the studio.
And if you think you've got the answers to all of the questions, you're getting it wrong.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair comment. It really is. What is the direction of travel then for this going forward? Or what is the aspiration for employers and employees starting to understand the new way of working?
For me, trust is such an important part of that.
We're going to keep coming back to that,
aren't we? We're going to keep on coming back to trust. You absolutely get the best from your team if you trust them to deliver the job. At the same time, you need to be clear about what that delivery outcome is so that they are not working all hours and delivering something that you're going to go, oh, no, that's not what I wanted. Well, that's completely unfair.
Yeah.
So it's about being clear about what your mission is, what your vision is, what you're there to do as an organization, and then communicating that really clearly, listening, you know, and I think we all fail at that every now and again. I know I do. But trusting people.
We're all work in progress.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. But trusting people to deliver. And supporting people to get the best out of themselves.
Yeah. We've only really scratched the surface and I want to understand how do people get in touch or what are the URLs that we can provide so people can see the 160 companies that you spoke about, the advice and guidance, or even the phone numbers that they can utilize. What's the best way, Jane?
The best way is to go onto our website,
yep.
which is www.workingfamilies.org.uk. And there we will have various pieces of information. So the first thing is our advice to parents and carers. You can find out how to fill in our form to get individual advice,
yes.
how to telephone us, and also how to email us. And there are lots of things that you can download. For example, we get 10,000 downloads a month of yep. how to request flexible working.
Okay. Wow. There is definitely a need, isn't there?
There is definitely a need. We also have all of our advice for employers.
Yes.
And for smaller employers, we have some free advice on the website, which
right.
is always good.
Okay.
Anything free is very nice to have. And then we've got a deep dive into our policy calls. What are the things that we will never stop campaigning for? So, for example, at the moment,
yeah.
in law, fathers get 2 weeks of paternity leave paid at what will be £178 a week.
Right.
We don't think that's enough. But we do think you need to change these things over time. We'd like a slightly faster pace to the change, but we're never going to get to a situation where women are going to be closing the gender pay gap unless fathers and men are also doing caring responsibilities. And we know it happens, and dads are great and they are wonderful allies, but they also need to have that support from government to be able to take that time.
Is there a standout proud moment for you in the work that you've done? Is there something that's happened or you've helped to happen where you thought, that's a big win?
So for us, we were really delighted this year.
Yes.
There were a number of private members' bills that went through, and we worked with a number of other charities to get these through. So Carers UK are very proud to say that there is now going to be 5 days of unpaid
yep.
leave that you can take as a carer throughout the year.
Right.
So if care breaks down and, you know, you need to take
half
a day.
You have to jump in. Yep.
You have to jump in.
Right.
You've got 5 days
okay.
that you can take without being fired. We worked with Bliss on the neonatal leave and pay bill. If you have a baby early, the amount of time that you need to spend at hospital
mm-hmm.
and everything that that involves can be really challenging. So there's some new legislation around that.
Right.
And for us as an organisation, it was working with Yasmin Qureshi on the private members bill, which changes the flexible working regulations. These are the ones that are coming in from the 6th of April.
Well, I think that's called impact, isn't it? That'll keep you going, Jane, if nothing else. Listen, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you. I'm so grateful for you taking the time to come into the studio. Have you enjoyed the conversation?
I've loved the conversation. I do like a good chat.
And it's always easier in person, even though we've talked about flexible working and hybrid. But it's lovely to see you in the studio. Thank you so much indeed.
Thanks very much, Adam. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Thank you. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.